The Kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.
Neil Atkinson's here from the Anfield Wrap. Hello, Neil.
Hello, Steve.
Let's get it out of the way. Thursday, possible announcement on the stadium for Everton. It's a good thing, isn't it, for the city?
It is a good thing for the city, yeah. It's good for that area as well, of the city, down that Docklands area. That is a good thing, and I think it's churlish to try to say otherwise. And I don't think many people are trying to say otherwise, really. I don't think that's going round. There's a little bit of resentment around, I think it's probably fair to say, residual, and people probably can't even to a certain extent put their finger on it, around how difficult bits and pieces of planning Liverpool have found across all of the time. And this, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about a 20-year stretch. I'm not talking about like just the last three or four. Mm. I'm talking about a 20-year stretch, and I can understand that. I mentioned it last night on All in the Game that, you know, there was... I'm going to say the name and I'm not going to go any further, but you know, people of a certain age, with me being the youngest, will remember Joe Kenny and the way in which lots and lots of things tried to, you know, the things that Liverpool tried to do and how they were, they'd find themselves getting blocked from all sorts of angles. And it strikes people as quite odd that was the case then. But that doesn't mean for a second that the civic progress that should happen with Everton getting a new ground should in any way, shape or form be seen as a negative, because it isn't. It's, you've only got to look at the way in which the city functions around Liverpool home games to think it would be a huge positive for it to get to function the same way around Everton home games. And the further use of that facility, for instance, for summer events and concerts is undoubtedly really, really good for the city. And that's the first thing that was sort of here for, if you know what I mean, is the betterment of the city of Liverpool. And what Liverpool and Everton both do anyway, as it stands for the city, is huge, both as cultural and global ambassadors on the one hand, but also in terms of being able to the amount of money that people from outside the city who come to watch the football matches bring in with them, spend.
Yes.
All of that's a huge positive, you know, and it gets spread out. There's a proper sense of that money, you know, being spread. It goes to the bars, it goes to the taxi drivers, it doesn't just go to the hoteliers, it doesn't just go to, you know, to people who have already got chains and brands and then be siphoned off out of the city. If you get in a black cab or a Delta in the city, or all the taxi firms are available, then the money is going to those people and then it's getting spread amongst the community, if you know what I mean, when they go on and spend. So the idea that it's not, for instance, going to just to something like the Hilton, not that there's anything wrong with the Hilton, it's a very good hotel, but then the Hilton goes and takes it away as part of Pot Hilton nationwide, yeah, if you know what I mean. That's what doesn't happen, and so it is worth remembering that as a positive thing for the entirety of the city, no matter who you support. And so yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more, finding out more about
it. I want to see the plans. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, there's other stuff down there. There's like the Invisible Wind Factory down there, which is a great venue, but it's not sort of linked to the rest of the city, and it's important that happens, that area gets linked as well. So yeah, you know, anything that can encourage that spread of the city into North Liverpool and then hopefully shift that up across North Liverpool as well can only be seen as a good thing, really.
Right. Let's hope something comes of that on Thursday. Just on the new stadium and new sort of new stand at Liverpool as well. So Everton move. Presumably they'll have a stadium with naming rights. Liverpool built a brand new stand, and they were looking at naming rights for that stand. Is that sort of dead in the water? What's your understanding of why that never sort of resurfaced or nothing came to fruition with it?
I think it's a difficult thing to sell, because I think one of the reasons why it's easier to do naming rights on something completely new and fresh is you get to define the name, whereas the main stand's the main stand. I mean, there's still people who call the centenary the Kemlin, because that's what they grew up calling it. So it's actually quite a difficult thing to do. And also, what's a stand? If you want the naming rights, if I'm Coca-Cola and I want the naming rights, I'll have the whole ground, please. But then do you want the whole ground? Because people still say, I'm going to Anfield. They won't say, I'm going to the Coca-Cola Stadium. In general, it's quite a difficult thing to do. And I don't think it's that straightforward. As far as Liverpool Stadium's concerned, Liverpool should be genuinely engaged with the idea of finding a way to turn what's 55,000 people into 80,000 people. And they should be also in the same space, and they should also be therefore engaged with Everton and with the City Council in terms of saying, right, one of our issues has been transport links, so is there a way we can work together on transport links, please, and find a way to effectively serve Bramley Moor, serve Anfield, the area thereof, and serve the city and get huge numbers of people in and out, not just on match days, but then also in general and on a daily basis, so that, again, you open up. It's ridiculously difficult to get to and from Anfield, not just on match days.
Is there any feasibility of getting a rail line to Anfield?
Well, there could be.
Or is it just too built up?
Well, there's a rail line relatively close in any case that's discontinued. So there is feasibility in it, but part of feasibility is sometimes you've just got to make things feasible. And Liverpool's ambitions shouldn't stop at the idea of, you know, well, we feel as though we can do this and get it paid for with enough corporates. Liverpool's ambition should be, genuinely should be, how do we become the defining force in English football? And one of the ways.
So the redevelopment of the Anfield Road end should still be very much on
that
the
should
table.
Be on, but, also,
but it seems to have been pushed to one side publicly,
so.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it has been pushed to one side, and I think that's hugely regrettable. I think it's a real error. Because, well, the reason why I think it's a real error is because there should be the desire to get as many people in the ground watching Liverpool as possible. The boost, and I think it has given the club a boost in the first half of the season that the new stand gave, is significant. And but there's also something you should want to build. You should want as many people as possible to watch your football team in person. I think that's quite straightforward. Now, as possible, therefore, can mean, well, how many seats are there? But as possible can mean, well, how many more seats can we get? What can we do to genuinely find a way to increase capacity? How can we, for instance, is there a way to build the Kop back so that it is as big as the main stand, that it goes as far back? Can that be explored? There's loads and loads of reasons why it's really difficult. No one is saying it's easy. I think that what you want is you want to see that there's the appetite to explore it right the way across the whole of the ground. And so, therefore, what is the actual... So when you are talking about feasibility, you're not just getting someone to conduct a feasibility study in terms of, well, what can we do? You're getting someone to go, no, this is how you make it feasible. And that's something which I think is... I understand that there's tons of reasons why you don't do that. One of them will always be and is cost. But there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money in the game. And there is also, if you want to say, for instance, if you want to talk about it as a product, if you want to talk about it as, if you want to talk about the Premier League in general as a product, one of the things that makes the Premier League product is actually the attendances, the crowds, the atmospheres. That's literally part of what people are buying into. Yeah. I know this. I mean, we go abroad and we speak to regular people who aren't, for instance, corporate people, but we speak to regular Liverpool supporters in Australia, in Ireland, in the United States, all the way around the world. People get in touch with us. And one of the things that you realise that they're into is, of all of our sides, of Liverpool, of Everton, of you name the club, they're into the culture of English football, and part of that culture is the atmosphere. That's why, for instance, they haven't got an Italian team. They haven't particularly got a Spanish side. You know, there's because they don't find that aspect of it as pulsating, as aggressive, as exciting. They don't want to sort of be part of that throng of people, which I think English football can do. And so in general, you know, Spurs are looking at increasing the number of people who can see Spurs. Chelsea,
what's theirs going to? I think they're both going to about
60,000. Right, they're both going to go to about 60,000. But it's as much about sort of the design of those stadiums. This is why the main stand has proved to really, really work, is that it feels like everyone's there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's still on top of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a running track and then there's all these other people and all these other options. It's steep and it's quite intense, and it gives that vibe over. And I just think that there's loads and loads of room for that within what the Premier League in general should be looking to do. And I think that if they can do that so that you are able to have pulsating, you know, Merseyside derbies in front of 75,000 people home and away, well, that is a good thing. In fact, it's a great thing. And then from there, that's one of the ways in which people go, you know what, people who, for instance, find the game fresh. We have a lot of conversations about this in our office at the moment, because of what we do. And one of the things that you've got to remember, and that you very easily forget because you live this stuff, all of us, people I'm speaking to now, I'm sure, that we live this stuff so much. But from a Liverpool point of view, Istanbul was 12 years ago. So there's every chance now. When I went to LA last summer in the pre-season tour, I was stood next to a woman who I remember, who was in her early 20s, and we were chatting away. And she basically, one of the things that stayed with me, is she'd never seen Didier Mankicker. And that to me is mad. And when we talk on shows, we often talk about, you know, he's got to be a bit more like Didier Mann there. It actually happened on a show yesterday that's coming out today. He's got to be a bit more like Didier Mann
in
those scenarios.
And it means nothing to her.
Well, she's got no idea.
Yeah.
Not unreasonable. She's got absolutely no... What does that mean? And then when you're having other conversations and people say, oh, yeah, he's a bit like Alan Hansen. I mean, she's got no idea who that is. But that isn't unreasonable. It isn't the idea that you've got to be absolutely steeped in this stuff and always have been and always will be. Well, if we want, which I think we do want, and we want Liverpool and Everton, and I'm going to group them together, we want Liverpool and Everton to be global behemoths in a football sense. If we want that, then remembering that there's so many different sorts of ways in which that comes about is quite a difficult thing. But one of the ways in which it comes about, as I say, is let's say that 150,000 people can watch the Merseyside derby home and away, and that means that a billion people are watching it worldwide, which means that of that billion people, it might be that, you know, 10 million decide, you know what, I like Everton, I want to get right behind Everton.
I don't like this Liverpool one, you know what I mean? With all the one more league titles, the giving it too much of the big one, blah, 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 I'm going to get behind these. That's fine, and that should be what we want our football teams to be. And I think it's a wonderful experience, and I think it speaks so highly of the city, and that it's still an ongoing process, that people fall in love with the football teams through the city, and they fall in love with the city through the football teams. And that's a really, really, really good thing, and should be, honestly, encouraged to the ends of the earth. Not least because, you know, we live in uncertain times. So the idea that Liverpool holds a special place in the hearts of millions of people around the world is actually something that can help sustain Liverpool should things get difficult, should things get tricky.
And it's why Everton should have a stadium as big as possible, and why Liverpool should maximise their abilities
to the
greatest extent. Just very, very quickly on this then. So you said the Kop, but actually would it not be ideal to do the Anfield Road end and build that into the Monster?
Possibly. I mean, again, this is why you need people who know more about it than me in terms of feasibility studies and who put the time in. As I say, my things are long been feasibility shouldn't mean find ways that things are unfeasible, if you know what I mean. That's my issue with the whole thing is I'm sure there are ways and means.
Xabi Alonso, brilliant interview on the Anfield Wrap at
they
the moment.
Fun,
how on earth you didn't go out to this, I don't know. But for some reason, Andy Heaton... they are great lads. Andy Heaton and John Gibbons were sent out to go and fawn over Xabi Alonso for an hour and a half.
They fawned magnificently.
Oh, they just look like they're having the time of their life, just gazing into his eyes. And
well, how could you not?
What do you gain from this Xabi interview about his love of Liverpool and Merseyside and the culture and how it sort of affected him?
Well, that it's profound and that it's a real thing. But I think what you gain from it, though, is another reminder of the fact that he was then and continues to be now an intelligent, open-minded young man who very much was into the idea of experiences and that he embraced these experiences. And I think, again, it's not just Xabi. I think it's footballers in general. Before Xabi, I had a chat to Jamie Carragher about Xabi but other matters. And I think a lot of the time we presume that our footballers, we don't give them the right to be intelligent. Whereas there's no getting away from the fact that Xabi Alonso, not just in a footballing sense, but that Xabi Alonso's very clearly an intelligent young man. And when he came to Liverpool, he came to embrace Liverpool as much as anything else. He came open-hearted, open-minded. You know, he came to get everything that he could. It's a fantastic interview. I don't want to sort of recount it verbatim, but for instance, the stuff around, you know, the fact that it's the first ever penalty he'd taken in a game in Istanbul.
Yeah,
it's very,
great,
very, it's very entertaining. It is the sort of thing that, you know, wow. And also that Harry Kewell might have took it.
You don't get that until you listen to the bit and you actually go, no.
Exactly.
No, you're having us on, Xabi.
Yeah, no, and he never took one for Sociedad. And, you know, and as I say, that although Harry Kewell would have taken it, which is really interesting in that, you know, how would that have played out? But all the insight all the way through from the different ups and downs that he had. But it just gives you a sense of who he is, and that's what I like about these interviews, the way in which we do them, and is it very much it's the rules and regs of the interview, really, is that that's why at times the sound quality can do your head in a little bit, but it very much is because it's not going to be typed up, because we're not going to take quotes, because there's no little bits, we're not going to put it out as is 15 minutes and then is a separate 15 minutes, but we've got rid of all these bits in the middle. That some people, if they're looking for a news line, might think it a bit dull. But actually what you want the sense of Xabi Alonso as a person. You want the sense of him sort of talking these things through. And you want to feel him, and that there's these two Liverpool supporters there who watched him play, who bought tickets, who went sitting in a press box, who bought tickets to watch him, and who are now getting to speak to him. And you just get that huge sense of him. And and that's what I think means that it isn't dull and makes it absolutely enthralling. And it's why you don't need a news line. You just want this sense of, here's this person, and you're going to get all of the sense of this person who's remarkably good at football, had this unbelievable career, this really quite spectacular life that also you get the impression for him isn't over. Not just because, oh well, he could become a manager, but in general, you've given a young man who wants to know more and more and more about the world loads and loads of money and ability to therefore go and find it all out. And all of that comes through when you just think, yeah, this is a good man.
And as you say, 12 years since Istanbul, so you know, you're talking about a lady you met who you'd said, have you seen him kick it about Didi Haman? That will soon become the case with your Xabi Alonso. I mean, obviously, far more have seen him because of his heroics with Madrid or Bayern Munich,
Spain,
etc. Yeah, completely. But all of a sudden, you're sort of thinking, wow, we witnessed a bit of greatness. How do you stumble across another Xabi Alonso? I mean, we've been sort of 12 years without seeing anything of the ilk.
But I think that's because some footballers are sort of really quite unique. And I think it is also worth remembering that, you know, two seasons in there, Xabi actually doesn't have
good seasons. You can say by his own standards, but I would sort of say by the standards of a Liverpool centre midfielder. In fact, you can maybe even throw out a little bit of an Emre Can comparison. To be honest with you, you know, in terms of the fact that Emre Can looked last season like he was on some sort of springboard towards having the potential to be end up being deemed a Liverpool great to this season, it's stalled and, if anything, gone backwards. Though, again, he was impressive at the weekend, so he shows what he can do in little fits and starts, but can't put a run together, which very much is Xabi Alonso in his third and fourth season. You know, it wasn't like they were all injury driven or mediocre games. There'd be games where you go, right, he's back here, and then the next week you'd be going, come on, Xabi, any hopes?
Yeah,
but you know, because football constantly changes, I think that's another issue, really. For instance, when you do mention someone like Didier Mann, well, when I watched Man City versus Liverpool at the weekend, how does Didier Mann cope in that game? I'm sure he would have found a way because he's a hugely intelligent footballer, but the very speed of that, you know, Yaya Toure.
I was just going to say that. Perhaps he'd have looked at Yaya and thought, what would he do?
Yeah, well, that's it. But you know, when Liverpool went to Old Trafford in January, Michael Carrick got hooked at half time. And before that game, everyone was saying, Carrick's back, you're playing him every week, he's getting the best out of Carrick, that's been the springboard for the success. He gets hooked at half time because he can't live with it. And I do think that this is when we do get frustrated, for instance, that I'll use Henderson as an example, that Henderson isn't passing the ball with the fluency of a Xabi Alonso. Yeah, but Xabi wouldn't last 10 minutes in that game. He would, listen, as I say, he would have found a way. But what I mean is that if you want to just take the raw things that we saw from the footballers, that's about as fast. Man City Liverpool's about as fast as a football match I've ever seen. And off the back of that, therefore, you've got to be able to play at that pace to cope. And as I say, Yaya Toure, honestly, on 50, he needs an oxygen tent. And and if he stays on 5 more minutes, Liverpool probably win the game 2-0 or 3-0. And I'm talking about someone who I, by the way, think is a great footballer, and who I genuinely think has been a great footballer, and who I think this season's been terrific for them at times. Done really, really well since he's come back in. But he, as I've said on one of the shows, he needed one of those silver foil capes to give marathon runners at the end.
Absolutely.
When he comes off, the camera cuts to him, and he looks. It's like a cry for help in visual form. Can someone just get me off this pitch, please? Because all these lads are just running past me, and my teammates are looking at me like, what's going on here? And I've got no answers for them.
Radio City Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.